First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Florida could soon allow people to carry concealed guns without permits or training. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, we'll tell you about a bill that would remove requirements for a permit and training to carry a concealed gun in the state. This is legislation endorsed by the governor. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the expansion of gun rights in Florida. Get on the line. Let us know your thoughts. Then later, next week's mayoral town hall is set as the March election approaches. We'll tell you about that and more all ahead. But first this hour, Florida could soon become the 26th state to allow people to carry concealed loaded guns without a permit. This is under legislation endorsed Monday by House Speaker Paul Renner and the Florida Sheriff's Association. It's dubbed constitutional carry by some supporters, and the concept behind the bill also has the backing of Governor DeSantis. Now, the proposal makes no change in current gun laws limiting the open display of sidearms or long guns, what is known as open carry. That's an expansion, though, that some gun advocates want. It's drawn pushback in Florida, a state dependent on tourism. Now, at the same time, this week, the first week of February, is National Gun Violence Survivors Week. Because more people die from gun violence by early February in the United States than in an entire calendar year in other high-income countries. This is a week set aside for loved ones and advocates to amplify the voices of survivors and share their stories. This morning, we welcome Dominic Broaddus, whose son was killed by gun violence in North Florida. Good morning.
Good morning.
Advocate the Reverend Dr. Russell Meyer. Good morning. And Katie Hathaway of Jack's Moms Demand Action. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Let us know your thoughts about the expansion of gun rights in Florida. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJacks. In a little bit, we'll talk about the possible passage of what's called permitless carry in the state of Florida. But first, Dominic Broaddus, I appreciate you being here. Your son was killed by gun violence, murdered in February of 2018 in McClenny, Florida, not too far from here. Can you tell us about your son?
Yes, Melissa, I can. My son, Dominic Jerome Broaddus, he was 31 years old when he was killed. And like you said, it was in early February of 2018. What we know about my son's case, and it's still ongoing. We're getting ready for the civil trial coming up in May, but from our understanding of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigation on this matter, my son met Gardner Frazier back in June of 2017 on a website. Those two got together, and probably in November. Late November of 2017, Mr. Frazier, Gardner Frazier, reinitiated contact with my son. And over a course of about four or five weeks, they exchanged maybe 200 to 300 text and phone calls, trying to arrange a meeting. On February 3rd, my son arrived at his secluded residence, which he had to be invited to because of all those texts. They were invitations and enticing my son to come over and visit him. When my son got to Gardner Frazier's house in McClenny on the 3rd of February, within a few minutes, he was shot four times in the head. The first two being grazing blows, but the second two were fatal blows to the back of his head, execution style.
And there is a civil case going over your son's murder. Florida State Attorney Melissa Nelson is not charging Gardner with criminal homicide, justifying it under Florida's so-called Stand Your Ground law. It gives the benefit of the doubt to armed aggressors who say they feared for their lives when they fired their weapon. Obviously, as a father, you don't agree with that, but that is the state's case.
Yes, that's the state's case. This case has moved from the Baker County State Attorney to the Jacksonville State Attorney, Melissa Nelson's office, because Sir Vaughn, the previous state attorney in Baker County, recused himself. They call this a stand your ground law. However, you know, there are exceptions in stand your ground. My son was invited over there several times, and you can see that from the text. Again, after Gardner Frazier executed my son, he disappeared my son's phone, which has never been found. He erased text messages from his phone. He called his cousin to come over to the house, mm-hmm. his sister, and his dad before calling 911. He never provided a statement to the police. He said through his lawyer that he didn't know my son. So I don't see on any of those premises how you can say stand your ground applies. And that's why I'm really opposing the stand your ground. It needs to be amended or at least repealed, because they passed this law in 2005. Florida was the first state. They could be the first state to repeal it. But they amended it, the law, only a few months before my son's death in June of 2017. And when they amended it, they put the burden of proof on the prosecution and not the defense to prove. And to be prima facie, stand your ground, it should be that means the facts have to be accepted. Those facts aren't accepted.
I see. And tomorrow is the fifth anniversary, tragically, of your son's death. And again, very sorry for your horrible loss of your son. Okay, so Reverend, stand your ground has been the law of the land in Florida for some time. Now the legislature is looking to introduce what is called permitless carry. Florida citizens will be allowed to carry concealed loaded weapons into public spaces without permits or training. About half of the states have passed this law, kind of law, already. So this is happening around the country. Second Amendment supporters say there are too many onerous, burdensome obstacles in their way to be able to carry a loaded weapon. What's your response?
Well, Florida is not Montana or Wyoming, where you might have to drive 10 or 15 miles just to see a neighbor. In that period of time, you're dealing with wolves and grizzly bears. So what we have are people from every nation in the world coming to Florida, and it's the centerpiece of our economy. And so what might sound rational out in the western states is simply irrational in Florida.
At the same time, as we talk about this, Katie Hathaway, you're with the local chapter of Moms Demand Action on Gun Sense in America. This is National Gun Violence Survivors Week, a time set aside to honor those who've been lost to gun violence. And, you know, let me ask you, the Florida Sheriff's Association supports this legislation. Law enforcement in Florida is supporting this legislation. What about that?
I'm just shaking my head a little bit with that. I saw our Sheriff T.K. Waters put out a statement in favor of this as well. And if everyone is armed, everyday confrontations could potentially turn into deadly shootouts. And I can't help but think that that would make law enforcement's job more difficult when they're showing up and everyone's armed. How are they to know who is, quote unquote, the good guy with the gun? So, and I know that there are sheriffs, Sheriff Mina and Sheriff Tony have spoken out against this legislation in Florida.
You're talking Orlando and
Broward County.
Okay, so then what is your organization's position on gun rights?
We are not anti-Second Amendment. We just want reasonable gun laws in place to make our communities safer.
What would those be? And what would you enact if you were enacting this kind of legislation?
There are two bills out there right now that were filed. They're funding for community violence intervention programs. These are the boots on the ground organizations working to reduce gun violence or address its root causes. So that's one solution. Or closing our background check loopholes.
Red flag laws have become more popular around the country. A number of states have adopted those. Reverend, they would keep weapons out of the hands of someone who's mentally ill or unstable. What about that? Where do you stand on those?
Well, Florida has some red flag laws.
They and have, in the wake of Parkland, that was
right,
passed.
In the wake of Parkland, which is coming up 5th anniversary on Valentine's Day this year. And they have been very successful. But the governor's not asking the Sheriff's Association to talk about the success they've had with red flag laws. We have a governor who removes constitutional officers who don't agree with him. So to say that that the sheriffs are all lined up, you're pretty much in a position right now as a constitutional officer in the state of Florida to line up with the governor or not go too far away from him, because he has the power to remove you from office.
We'll go to your calls in a bit at 549-2937. Let's, since we were unable to get a Second Amendment advocate on this morning, I'm going to read from Gun Owners of America. And this is an essay by Luis Valdez, Florida State Director for Gun Owners of America. He says, Florida's current concealed carry scheme has racially motivated roots. Thankfully, the governor and the House Speaker have pledged to abolish this Jim Crow era relic by passing constitutional carry in the upcoming legislative session. He says that Florida's gun control can be traced to the 1880s when Confederate sympathizers regained control of the legislature after Reconstruction. The first thing they did was amend the Florida Constitution to regulate the carrying of firearms. The reasoning behind this was to push black codes under Jim Crow. So, Mr. Broaddus, what's your response to that? The Florida State Director for Gun Owners of America is supporting this legislation, saying that it will do away with what he calls one of the last relics of Jim Crow. He's tying gun restrictions to the Jim Crow era in Florida.
First, I'd like to know if he's a white guy or a black guy.
Luis Valdez, so likely Hispanic.
Exactly. I was raised up in the Deep South in Mobile in the 1960s, so I'm very familiar with the Jim Crow laws. I'm familiar with the Stand Your Ground laws we have in Florida, and they are disproportionately affect black people and people of brown and black skin. This new law of carrying a gun is going to only exacerbate the problem. You know, Republicans talk about mental illness being the main problem for gun violence. Well, they haven't addressed mental illness, and now you want to give everybody a chance to carry a gun? That makes no sense. And black people are the ones that suffer from this. You can see from my son's case, there's so much forensic and evidence that's there, investigative evidence, and we're still having a tough time. Unless you're a black person and you have it on video, you know, and you're lucky then if you get a fair trial, you still have your fingers crossed. You know, we haven't crossed this line of the Jim of them passing laws that affect blacks. They're still Jim Crow laws, and we still have to come out and say that now. This is 2023, not 1960. You know, so these laws are Jim Crow laws, and they privilege the whites and not the black.
Let's go to your calls now as we talk about the expansion of gun rights in Florida. The legislature is poised to pass permitless carry legislation in their upcoming spring legislative session. 549-2937. Greg on the South Side. Hi, Greg.
Good morning. How are you doing?
All right. Thanks for calling.
That I have a comment and then a question. We have a gun culture in this United States, and countries around the world don't wonder why we have such high violence, because they know why we do. when we look at stand your ground, permitless carry, and then what will possibly be in the next round, open carry, it equals to a rise in violence. Look at Texas. Since they've enacted those laws, Texas crime has risen anywhere between 16 and 17% violent crime. Mostly affected are those who are looking to complete suicide, and it's most often done with a gun, and that has risen tremendously. And then lastly, I'll say with my question, why not allow the citizens of Jacksonville to vote constitutionally? I mean, the citizens of Florida to vote constitutionally if we want to have this law enacted.
Mm-hmm. You mean a referendum? Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you for that. Okay, Reverend Meyer, let's talk about this. We have received a statement from another sheriff's office, the Clay County Sheriff's Office. That sheriff says, and I quote, "The Constitution protects gun ownership rights and the ability to carry a firearm. Violent criminals are not applying for a state permit to carry a gun. Removing the permitting process will assist law-abiding community members and allow them to defend themselves and their families. That being said, I strongly recommend any citizen who wishes to carry a gun to become proficient with their weapon and use an appropriate holster to secure the weapon on their person." What's your response to that? That's from the Clay County Sheriff.
Well, I understand the rhetoric in the talking points. I just don't think it's accurate or truthful. In terms of the constitutional question, the Constitution was addressing muskets, and it was addressing state militias, and it was enacted to make certain that President Washington wouldn't commandeer state militias for any other national purpose, because they needed to stay home to make certain slaves wouldn't revolt, and that American Indians wouldn't try and take their land back. So the situation that developed the Second Amendment is very different from where we are today. Mm-hmm. Justice Scalia knew that, and he did a switcheroo.
And you're talking about the Heller case?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, in 2008, the Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right to possess firearms independent of service in a state militia and to use them for lawful purposes, including self-defense your house. Go ahead.
That's correct. And that case also says that the government, the state, has the right to control the power and ammunition, the kind of weapon, and et cetera. And so Heller didn't give a blanket check for gun ownership. The state still has a responsibility to protect all of its citizens. And to just, on the Martin Luther King weekend in South Florida, there was a block party, and two rival gangs just started shooting at one another, killed seven people. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we're looking at without having the license and go through training and et cetera. People will mix alcohol and drugs and have a gun on them, and they've lost the capacity to act rationally. And in the emotion of the moment, they will grab the closest thing that will secure what they want. People will die because of this legislation.
Lots of calls on this. Let us know your thoughts. Matt in Orange Park. Hi, Matt. Good morning.
Good morning. I think that this is the worst decision possible. There should be mandatory training. You know, it's ridiculous. You have to send kids to student at driver's education, or they have to pass a written test and a performance test to get a driver's license. A gun? Come on. There should be mandatory training, and there should be a cap on the cost so that people aren't taken advantage of, since it would be mandatory training.
Thank you, Matt. Nancy at the beaches. Hello, Nancy.
Hi. Just wanted to point out that among developed nations, the U.S. is number one in child firearm deaths. That is the number one cause of death of children between ages 1 and 19. We literally lost thousands. I think it's almost 5,000 kids in 1 year. The next highest number is around 50 for developed nations. I'm talking about entire countries lost 50 kids, and we are losing thousands. And this law will just make that even worse. And the statement by Mr. Valdez that this is somehow Jim Crow is absolutely, pardon my French, bass-ackwards, because it impacts people of color worse, and he knows that. And also the statement that suicide is a huge concern, absolutely true. That's still the number one cause of death. And we don't talk about it. We don't talk about mental health. We don't talk about suicide. So this is a travesty, absolute travesty.
Thank you, Nancy. Lots of calls. Jordy in St. Augustine. Hi, Jordy. What do you think?
Hi. I'm a middle-aged white male, born and raised in the South. Grew up with hunting culture around me. I participated a little bit. So I understand the frontier spirit of wanting to own guns. I'm a concealed weapon permit owner now, and I strongly believe in gun regulation. And I would challenge any person who holds up the Second Amendment as their absolute right to know the entire amendment. Most people can recite the last third, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, but they don't know the first four words, which are a well-regulated militia. So there's that word regulated that a lot of people on the right do not like, but it's right in there in the Second Amendment. So it is not an absolute right. I've had this debate with gun owners, and some of them have the absurd position that anybody at any time, regardless of background, should be able to buy any kind of gun they want. You can't get a driver's license that way. You can't get a contractor's license that way. I mean, the regulation is there to maintain order, protect consumers. I just don't understand this notion that it is an absolute right. It is not.
Thank you, Jordy. Lots of tweets as we talk about the potential expansion of gun rights in Florida. Here's one from a listener. This should be put to a public vote. Make it a referendum. Here's another tweet. Do people really want untrained people walking around with guns? Our gun homicides in Florida are already up 40% over the last decade. Katie Hathaway of Moms Demand Action, as that previous caller noted, he has a permit to carry a concealed weapon. And it is a fact that the majority of America's gun owners and the majority of Americans across the political spectrum support the kinds of regulations on firearms that your organization advocates for. Can you talk about where popular opinion is on guns?
Absolutely. A poll came out that around 88% of Americans think that you should have a permit to carry a loaded gun in public places. And a recent poll came out that 2/3 of Miami-Dade voters are against this legislation of permitless carry. Our communities are bleeding, literally traumatized by gun violence. 110 Americans are shot and killed every single day in this country. It's shameful that the gun lobby and its enablers in Tallahassee, like Governor DeSantis, are putting profits over public safety. More people are going to needlessly die if permitless carry is enacted in Florida.
Now, it's my understanding there will be rallies both in support of and opposing this legislation around Florida in the next week. You, with Moms Demand Action, are having one such event.
Not a rally. We do have a vigil planned to honor Gun Violence Survivors Week. And we will be gathering on the beach this Sunday on February 5th, at 4 o'clock p.m. at the end of Atlantic Boulevard. And we invite the community to come out, survivors to bring photos or mementos of their loved ones. And then we will close the vigil with a healing sound bath.
Well, I thank you all so much for being with us. Father Dominic Broaddus, whose family suffered from the tragedy of gun violence, the Reverend Dr. Russell Meyer, and Katie Hathaway of Jack's Moms Demand Action. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
And much more still ahead later. A mayoral town hall is coming up. You can meet the candidates for Jacksonville mayor next week. I'm actually hosting this one, and we'll tell you about it up next.
We are creating a community in Northeast Florida that talks about mental wellness. Anyone who is interested in getting trained in a multitude of mental health trainings can just go right to our website and sign up.
How you can get free mental health training for your family. That's next. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Well, it's an innovative collaboration among five local behavioral health organizations. Talkable Communities was inspired by the idea of walkable communities, you know, promoting social connectedness and healthy living in a walkable community. Well, Talkable Communities has the goal of enhancing mental health for kids and families across the region and also reducing substance abuse and suicide in our six-county area. Starting this month, Talkable Communities is providing free, evidence-based mental health training in six Northeast Florida counties. This is free, and you can take part. Justin Bradshaw is director of Talkable Communities, and he told me more. Justin, good to be with you. So you've got some exciting news to share. What's happening?
So we are creating a community in Northeast Florida that talks about mental wellness. And the exciting news is that we have our quarter one mental health training calendar available online now. So anyone who is interested in getting trained in a multitude of mental health trainings can just go right to our website and sign up.
That's great. And this is open to anyone, family members, caregivers, anyone who wants to reach out to a young person who might be having some struggles. Is that right?
Correct. Yes, ma'am. So we have training courses that are geared towards the general population. We have training courses that are specific for adults who interact with youth on a regular basis, like teachers, coaches, clergy members, things of that nature. And then we actually have a specific course that's dedicated for family members and caregivers to learn the signs and symptoms of suicide in their young people.
So how do these trainings work? And how do people walk away better equipped to help someone close to them?
Yeah, it's a great question. So these trainings, two of them are evidence-based and one is evidence-informed. So this just means that they've been through a lot of testing and trials to make sure that they are efficient and that they actually do have an impact. We rate the efficacy of these trainings based on the knowledge increase. So we test everyone before and after. And right now we're averaging about a 55% in knowledge increase. And basically you just show up to the training, either virtually or in person. You learn about the signs and symptoms of mental health and substance use problems, and you learn about suicidal ideation, and then you're able to walk away being able to recognize those signs and symptoms in people that you know and love.
And then refer them, hopefully refer them to get some more help, right?
Exactly. So we offer a wraparound and referral service. So we've created a Northeast Florida resource guide. Everyone that takes one of our training courses walks away with one of those guides, and it offers you local and national crisis numbers, 24 hours, of course, and then any mental health and substance use resources that you need in your community.
Now, let's talk a bit about Talkable Communities, which is a collaboration among a group of local behavioral health organizations around the community. Talkable Communities, that was inspired by the concept of walkable communities, correct?
Yes, ma'am, that is correct. So a walkable community is the model that says all of the resources that you need, be it grocery stores, primary care providers, anything and everything you need is in a walking distance to your home. So we took this model and we said, let's apply it to the mental health space. So what a talkable community is it's a community that, one, knows how to talk about mental health. And how does that happen? Well, it happens by putting mental health training resources in your community so that everyone at every turn knows how to access and engage in mental health conversations. And so we bring those training courses virtually to anyone across Northeast Florida and nationally even. And then we do in-person training courses so that these are more localized efforts to bring this training directly into the community.
These are free, evidence-based mental health trainings across six Northeast Florida counties: Clay, Duval, Flagler, Nassau, Putnam, and St. John's. And they're getting underway right away. They're starting in February. So how can people learn more, Justin, and attend?
Yeah, so you please visit talkablecommunities.org. That's www.talkablecommunities.org. There is a big green button that says register to get trained. and you can view an open training calendar. So any training that's listed on this calendar is open to the public, and you click on the training that fits your schedule, the time and day of your choosing, and then you register for free. You receive a host of confirmation emails, and then you show up either virtually or in person to the site and get trained.
Justin Bradshaw, he's director of Talkable Communities. Check it out. And thanks so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
The Interfaith Center for Northeast Florida is hosting its first ever mayoral candidate town hall next week. And I am honored to be moderating this event where several of the candidates for Jacksonville mayor will share their vision on what they would do to bring the city together. Rebecca Hutto, executive director of the Interfaith Center, is here with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good to be with you. And I'm so honored you asked me to moderate this event that is coming up next Tuesday night. And this is a forum for people to hear from the mayoral candidates.
It is. One of the goals of our center is learning about folks from different backgrounds. It's about celebrating diversity. And we really want to talk to the mayoral candidates about their perspectives on the diverse city of Jacksonville and how the team that they would work with, how the decisions that they would make as potential mayor would celebrate that diversity and recognize all that exists in Jacksonville.
Yeah. And so this is an opportunity for all of us to hear from the candidates. You've invited Leanna Cumber, Daniel Davis, Donna Deegan, Al Ferraro, and Audrey Gibson.
Yes.
Some of them have accepted. Is that right?
Yes, some of them have. Some of them we haven't heard back from yet.
Okay. So as of right now, we're expecting council member Leanna Cumber, Donna Deegan of the Donna Foundation, and former state senator Audrey Gibson.
Yes.
All candidates for mayor.
Yes.
So it could be we have a female moderator and three female candidates. No guys. We'll have to wait and see, I guess.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. But this is a way for people to hear where the candidates are on these issues, their vision for the city, and policy proposals they would embrace. So it's going to be a well-rounded discussion. That's what you want, isn't it?
We do. The goal of the Interfaith Center is learning whether you're religious or non-religious, learning about the various traditions here in the city. We use the tagline mutual curiosity, and that we encourage all folks in Northeast Florida to learn about our neighbors, to celebrate our differences and come together in ways that we're alike. And we really wanted to put this town hall on to ask specific issues around diversity and inclusion of our mayoral candidates, to put that really on the radar because that's what we're most passionate about.
This city has exploded in diversity in recent years. Tell us about what you're seeing at the Interfaith Center, about the city's changing demographics.
Well, just as an example, the event is being held across the street from the Bosnian Mosque, which up until a couple of months ago, I didn't even know existed. I'm coming into my third year here in Jacksonville, and it's been wonderful to meet partners in Interfaith Dialogue who have been doing this for 20 some odd years, but also to see new folks that are coming into the area, new temples being built, new mosques, new churches. I think all of us in the religious community are figuring out a little bit more of our identity post-COVID, when most of us had to go on a screen. And now we're really excited to be back in person and share that diversity and be together.
Tell us a little bit about your background. As you say, you're relatively new to town.
Yes. I am a Presbyterian minister. I'm actually married to a Baptist minister who's the senior pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist. And we were originally from South Carolina, but we're in New York City for 8 years. And that was where Interfaith really kind of was at my fingertips. It was all around. And Jacksonville, when I came here and learned about the work of One Jacks, learned about the work of the Interfaith Center, learned about just Interfaith Campus Ministry at UNF, I was really excited about these longtime partnerships. But some of what we say in our group is that we're sometimes preaching to the choir. Some of the same folks come to our events. And we're excited about this town hall because as we look at the RSVPs, it is a vast array of people from a variety of different backgrounds, which I think reflects what's going on in Jacksonville as a whole, that we are growing and we are becoming more and more diverse. And we think diversity is a gift. We think diversity is beautiful, That's how God created us in the beginning, and we love to celebrate that diversity and come together.
How much room is there in the hall? How many people have are you expecting?
We've maxed for 150. This is a new space for me, but I think last check we had about 120 who are attending.
Looks to be maybe a sellout.
That's what I would hope. I would really look forward to it. And we also wanted to share the mission of our organization. Speaking of Hendricks Avenue Baptist, we celebrated with Hendricks Avenue Baptist and the temple, who did a pulpit swap this past weekend. My husband and Rabbi Maya Glasser shared each other's worship spaces. We do big events at the Jacksonville Jewish Center, bringing in the Muslim community and the Jewish community. And we really want to show that we can come together. We can celebrate our differences and celebrate where we are alike.
This event is also open to people of no faith.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. One of the missions of our organization is to reach out to the religious and non-religious. And one of the things I think we are working through as an organization is that when we do religious events, it's sometimes faith-based events, is sometimes the folks who aren't in a religious community aren't drawn to that. So this is a unique event in that it's not religiously focused. It's focused on diversity. So we hope it welcomes a wider audience.
And I'm sure this will come up in the conversation. The topic of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, is in the news as Governor DeSantis says he'll defund any of those programs at Florida universities. What's your center's position on that?
Well, it is really disappointing to hear. We have a former board member who works in DEI at UNF who I would defer that question to. It's very disappointing because DEI work is all about inclusivity, and it's all about getting to know the differences of the folks around us. And we want to bring in a diverse population to this city. We don't want our city to be known as the place where anti-Semitic images were broadcast on buildings. We want it to be known as diverse and welcoming. And so I'm disappointed, and our organization is disappointed in the governor's recent action, because that affects everything about higher ed. It affects how we teach, it affects curriculum, it affects hiring, it affects the kind of students we bring in. And that's completely opposite to what our mission is.
In this town hall, you are hoping to learn from the candidates how they will move beyond buzzwords and leverage Jacksonville's increasing diversity. In other words, leveraging a diverse population for economic and cultural wins, mm-hmm. gains, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, again, we don't want to be on the national stage for hate messages. We want to be on the national stage for creative and innovative and welcoming initiatives that are going on. So I think whether it's DEI, whether it's the other things that are going on, it will have an economic impact. We want our students to stay here and want to be here. And I don't know how diversity among certain populations became a negative thing, but we want it to be a positive thing. We want it to be a beautiful thing. And we hope that that can raise Jacksonville's profile as the beautiful city that it is.
Now, can you talk a little bit about how the Interfaith Center of Northeast Florida differs or is similar to One Jacks?
Sure, that's a great question. We obviously are great partners with One Jacks and love to team up with One Jacks on events. The Interfaith Center began roughly in about 2012. It's a fairly young organization, and it started out as the Atlantic Institute, which is a wider national organization. It started out with a group of Muslims interested in this very thing, this interfaith dialogue. And over the last couple of years, particularly in 2019, there was kind of a renaming and a reshaping of our vision, wanting to move out of the national network and do more things locally here in Northeast Florida, building those relationships, bringing together temples and mosques and churches and bringing together peoples of all faith. And so we all had to take somewhat of a break during COVID. I took this position last summer, and I'm excited that we're finally gathering back together in person. Like I said, we are doing this event with the Jacksonville Jewish Center, combining Passover and Ramadan and Easter, making it a teachable event and an event where we share a meal. I'd also like to, as an organization, highlight the great work of Jewish Family Services and the Holocaust education that they're doing. With everything that's swirling in public education, they're doing some really great work to make sure that history is accurately told. And we had an event back in January on the religious diversity around reproductive rights. So many people have a perspective that there's only one religious perspective on reproductive rights, and there's a variety. So we have topics and things that we like to do that are faith-based, but I think this is a new event for us to branch out and do something in the civic sphere that we would like to continue to do.
How would you characterize Jacksonville's faith community? It's a pretty big, vibrant, robust, diverse community.
It is. And especially within the, I want to say as a Christian, within the Christian community, I know a certain church in the area is getting a lot of press lately for some decisions that they made, which are very, very contrary not only to my husband's Baptist
Church. The First Baptist Church, their statement on LGBTQ people.
Contrary to who I am as a Presbyterian. And that's just one slice of Christianity. And I think sometimes that slice of Christianity gets highlighted above others. There are a variety of mosques in the area. And one of the things that I love about some of the friendships and partnerships that I'm witnessing is we don't all have to agree, and we can still be in community together. I love how the Jacksonville Jewish Center and the Temple work together on things and how they become allies with each other. I am still learning about these communities and look forward to learning more. But I love that they exist because I took it for granted in New York that it was all around me, and it is all around me here, and I look forward to getting to know it more.
You know, I have to ask you, as you're talking about how Muslim mosques and Jewish temples are working together in Jacksonville, did you watch You People on Netflix when it came out the other day?
I know of it. I have not watched it yet. I have a little watch party where we want to do it together.
Yeah, I highly recommend you watch that as someone in your line of work because, you know, obviously they mine for laughs.
Mm-hmm.
A family that's Muslim and a family that's Jewish and their kids decide to get married. There's some, you know, moments in that film that you're just cringing.
Yes.
At
yes.
some of the dialogue, you're just so embarrassed for the character and the tone deaf things they're saying. But at the same time, I think it's reflective of where we are in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're trying to do with the Interfaith Center. Bring people of different backgrounds together.
And we can't be afraid to get together. Again, this is an organization that's about getting to know someone who might be different from you, someone who might be obviously different from you. It is not an organization about conversion. We're not saying you're wrong, you're right. We're really learning from each other. And that requires a certain faith perspective as well. But I have a watch party of friends from New York that want to watch the movie together so we can have those honest conversations.
That's great. Now, in the meantime, you can watch the Jacksonville Mayoral Town Hall, too. It's going to be broadcast live on Facebook. It's next Tuesday, February 7th at 7 p.m. You can come out in person to the venue. It's at 4160 Boulevard Center Drive in Jacksonville. The top five mayoral candidates have been invited so far. Three of them have accepted, the three women in the race, except for Omega Allen. She is not on this list. But Leanna Cumber, Donna Deegan, Audrey Gibson have all accepted. Daniel Davis and Al Ferraro have been invited as well. I am moderating this event. Again, this is the Interfaith Center's Mayoral Town Hall next Tuesday night, 7 p.m. at 4160 Boulevard Center Drive, and you can catch it live on Facebook. Rebecca Hutto, Executive Director of the Interfaith Center of Northeast Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I look forward to seeing you there.
Yes, I can't wait.
And in a moment, this week's Lucero concert and more. We'll be right back.
Congarean Pen, dedicated to agriculture and culinary endeavors, offering field-to-fork dining and outdoor experiences on over 300 acres. Sip, dine, explore. Information at congareeandpen.com.
Adjusting brainwaves to manage common conditions. I'm Dr. Joe Servin. Join me Saturday at 4 for What's Health Got to Do With It, only on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville.
People displaced by the war in Ukraine or by hurricanes, earthquakes, and crises worldwide. They need more than just tarps and cookstoves. They need a fresh start. Next time on The World, we hear about one emergency tool.
It's based on the simple premise of what are the things that you need to sustain your life if you lose everything?
A new beginning packed in a box on The World.
This afternoon at 3 p.m. here on WJCT News 89.9.
We asked you if you'd ever had a medical claim denied by your insurance company. Maybe we should have asked, who hasn't?
Allowing for profiteering corporations to make medical decisions is a direct conflict of interest and costs lives.
We share your stories and some new reporting on an issue faced by millions of Americans. Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
During a busy day, it can be hard to make room for even one more thing. So it's a real plus that All Things Considered from NPR News is great for multitaskers. You can confidently add being well-informed to your to-do list and know that you will get it done. Whether you're cleaning out your junk drawer on a quick drive or something else, listen to All Things Considered every weekday afternoon.
Starting at 4 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Alt country and rock band Lucero is performing downtown this weekend to support their 12th studio album. Here's their frontman, Ben Nichols.
And the new album is called Should Have Learned By Now. Yeah, we're coming to Intuition. It works. Yeah, we'll be playing a bunch of old stuff, but some of the new songs too. It's been a while since we've been to Florida. I think folks are ready for us to come back. I'm ready to come back for sure. Florida's always been very nice to Lucero.
So check it out if you're a fan of Lucero. They'll be playing at the Beer Hall at Intuition Ale Works Saturday, February 4th at 7 p.m. Get your tickets at 904-TIX. Speaking of events, Catalina Sylvain is here to tell us what Create Jax has on their curated list of cool things to do in February. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
All right, so are you a Lucero fan?
I am not. I'm not super familiar with them, but my husband is, so I might have to check out this show. And the Beer Hall is such a great, a cool, like, intimate venue.
Yeah. We have a little Lucero music, I think, that we'll either play now or in a minute. But what else is going on this week?
So much. I was just telling you that there's so much going on this weekend. I'm about to get overwhelmed and just stay home, but that's not the plan. We are going out this weekend. And tomorrow, there's a really great event. It's the First Friday Community Happy Hour at Memorial Park. This is a Riverside Avondale Preservation monthly event where everyone who loves the neighborhood and makes it special comes and hangs out in Memorial Park. And the small business spotlight for this month is Homespun Kitchen in Five Points. They're a little newer, and it's a from-scratch restaurant that focuses on organic and all-natural ingredients. Really good food. I am a huge fan of their breakfast burrito.
Nice.
Love them.
Okay, so that's this Friday, kicking off in Memorial Park, 4:30 p.m., community happy hour. That's awesome, and I love that park. Okay, over to the Ritz Theater, putting on the Ritz.
Putting on the Ritz. We know it. We love it. The Ritz is a beautiful historic theater in downtown, and this is their talent show, and it is one of the most popular talent competitions in the city, and this is their 22nd year, so they know what they're doing. And the way that it's set up is each show's host will open the show with a song and then present the contestants for the night. And it's always contestants from the previous months, like Next Up. So there's always wildcard performers, too, who can send in online auditions. So if you haven't been part of the show and you think you got that talent, hit up the Ritz. Be a part of this because there are cash prizes.
Now, what are the prizes? How much?
It's like... Oh, I think the top one is like $1,000.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's not bad.
So get in there. Putting on the Ritz. You got that talent? Hit
All right.
Up.
Check it out. That's also on the 3rd. Okay. What is the big gay party?
Okay. So this is a big weekend at the Glass Factory. This is a really awesome venue in the Rail Yard District. Tonight, it actually kicks off the weekend with the Big Gigantic. They're a huge EDM duo. The tickets I just heard are almost sold out. So if you want to check them out on the Brighter Future Tour Volume 2, get your tickets ASAP. And then the Big Gay Party is, I mean, it's in the name. This one is for the queer community.
Kind of self-explanatory.
For the queer community and its allies who all just want to do one thing, and that's dance. So there will be top-tier drinks, dancing, outfits, obviously, and DJs Honeydew and Luna XL are providing the soundtrack. They're known for all hits, no misses. This will be a really good party, and tickets start at $20.
That's at the Glass Factory, folks. And if you've never been, it's such a cool venue.
It's so good.
It's beautiful.
I love it.
Renovated Glass Factory in the Rail Yard District. All right. Markets for Makers in Toontown as we kind of look ahead to Valentine's Day.
Yeah. You start buying something for your little sweetie, your honey, at the Markets for Makers. This is the popular traveling market back in town this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And they've moved locations. It's usually been at the Glass Factory. But this time it's going to be at Toontown, and that's downtown right by the stadium. You've probably seen the crazy murals as you walk to Jags games. And there's like thousands of cartoon murals. So inside, it's just as incredible, just as cool. And there's going to be more than 90 local, national, and international vendors, food trucks, all kinds of things to shop. And I think the last time Markets for Makers was here in December, there was a guacamole food vendor. And we had the tastiest ahi tuna guacamole on like on top of some chips.
Oh,
it was
nice.
So good. So the tickets start at $8 for that because they're like timed entry tickets, but definitely worth checking out and shopping for Valentine's Day.
That's Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 4 at Toontown near the stadium, Markets for Makers. Okay, last but not least, Chris Clark, his exhibit opening up at the FSCJ Kent Campus Gallery.
Yes, so Chris Clark has a huge following, and this is his new growth solo exhibition featured at Kent Campus. He's one of the leading visual artists, not just in Jacksonville, but on a national scale. He's built a very loyal fan base around his work, from his paintings and murals to his more recent AI work. Yes, we are moving into the AI world.
Yeah.
So check out the opening. That is February 7th, and you will quickly be one of his nearly 59,000 Instagram followers waiting to see what Chris Clark does next.
All right, folks. Now for the full list, including a few we didn't have time to mention, go to createjax.com/thisweek. That's createjax with a number 8. Their motto is only the boring get bored. So, Catalina, always keeping things interesting. Thank you.
Never bored. Thanks, Melissa.
We'll close with a little Lucero. Again, their concert is Saturday night at Intuition Ale Works Beer Hall. Thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks to our team, David Luck and Heather Schatz, Brendan Rivers, Isabella Da Silva, Michelle Corum, and all of you out there. Drop us a line anytime. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. Make it a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.